Seeker. It's Mike Malloy here. Welcome to the program. Did you have a great Mother's Day weekend? Huh? Wasn't that fun? Did you go to the White House press dinner? You didn't? Did you watch it on television? Huh? How about that Wanda Sykes? Don't you just love her? Oh, my goodness. We'll get to that a little bit later. Yes, indeed we will. Oh, by the way, somebody sent me this last week when there was a big controversy about... ginned up by the Fox News freaks, especially this little twit, Sean Hannity, that somehow Barack Obama was displaying his elitist credentials when he ordered spicy mustard, you know, like Grey Poupon. somebody sent this to me. Grey Poupon is owned and manufactured by Kraft Foods. It is the processed cheese of mustards. It is the effing Velveeta of faux French products. Can we all just shut the F up? I had no idea. I thought it was, you know, where all that came from with Hannity and the rest of the squeegee brains was from those commercials back in when the 80s, where the two white guys in two limos come side by side at a stoplight, and one is slathering on Grey Poupon, and the other one says, "May I borrow you Grey Poupon?" Oh my God! Somebody ought to explain to the freaks over at Fox. No, never mind. This little story has a real personal tie to me. This was last Friday in Findlay, Ohio. A student at a fundamentalist Baptist school there that forbids dancing and rock music and hand-holding and kissing and probably sex before marriage, too. This kid will be suspended last Friday, this made the news, if he was to take his girlfriend to her public high school prom. She doesn't go to the Baptist school. She goes to the high school there, Findlay High School. Now, despite being warned by his Christian school principal, 17-year-old kid named Tyler Frost, who has never been to a dance before, said last Friday he planned to attend Findlay High's prom Saturday night anyway. This teenage kid was scheduled to receive his diploma May 24th, and he was warned by the principal of the Heritage Christian School in Findlay that the 17-year-old would be suspended from classes and he would receive an incomplete if he went to this dance. The 17-year-old also would not be permitted to attend graduation. He would get a diploma once he completes final exams. Now, if he was to have gone to the prom and got involved with alcohol or sex, he will be expelled, according to the principal, someone named Tim England. The 17-year-old stepfather said at the time last Friday that the school's rules should not apply outside the classroom. The stepfather said, you know, he deserves to wear the cap and gown. He earned it. The handbook for this Christian school, there are 84 students in this Christian school. The handbook says rock music, quote, is part of the counterculture, which seeks to implant seeds of rebellion in young people's hearts and minds, end quote. But when the waltz was invented in Europe a couple of hundred years ago, they said the same thing about the waltz. Remember? Oh, never mind. The principal at Findlay High School, the public school, whose graduates, by the way, include Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback Ben Roethlisberger, the principal said he respects but doesn't agree with Heritage Christian School's view of a prom. The Findlay High School public teacher, principal Craig Kupferberg, said, quote, I don't see dancing and rock music as immoral acts, end quote. The connection is I attended Findlay High School way back in, 1,000 years ago, back when I was 15 years old. I was a sophomore year in high school. My parents got divorced, and I just took off, ran away from home, and I didn't want any part of any of that garbage, and went to live with my grandparents in Findlay, and both sides of my family, my mother and father, were both from Findlay. So I attended Findlay High School for a while. And that's where I fell madly in love with a girl who was a cheerleader. Her name was Janie Creighton. And I don't know what ever happened to Janie, but if you're listening, I'm very happily married right now, Janie. So Findlay High School. Okay. So the kid went anyway. He went. Guess what happened? He has been suspended, as as the promise from this psychopathic Christian principal P-A-L, not P-L-E. The kid has been suspended. His high school career is now in the tank because he went to a high school prom. The 17-year-old said he didn't think going to the dance was wrong, even though his Baptist school forbids dancing and rock music and hand-holding. Here's the kicker. He didn't go to school today. Instead, he and his girlfriend are heading to New York to be on a television interview tomorrow morning. And the 17-year-old said he's now getting Facebook and email messages from around the world. So, if you're up early tomorrow, check out, I don't know what morning show, but he's going to be, maybe Good Morning America. Check out the morning TV interview tomorrow with this kid. And his girlfriend. I wonder if they're providing separate rooms for him. Who knows? While we all have been paying close attention to the cashiering of the general in charge of operations in Afghanistan and what Wanda Sykes and Barack Obama said Saturday night at the White House correspondents' dinner, this little news item popped up, and it's not little. The only place I've been able to find this is at Brad Friedman's blog site, bradfriedman.com. Ibn al-Sheikh al-Libi, whose false tortured confession was used as the basis for George W. Bush's lovely little war, al-Libi has reportedly committed suicide. British journalist Andy Worthington, an expert and author on Guantanamo, reports that this guy, al-Libi, who had supplied a key false tie between Iraq and al-Qaeda after being tortured in Egypt, where he had been rendered by the U.S., al-Libi has died in a Libyan prison. According to a Libyan newspaper, al-Libi, quote, is dead of suicide in his cell, end quote. Now, the story, according to the British journalist, Andy Worthington, that story is, his word, ablaze in the Arabic media, but so far it is unreported in all but one English language outlet. Worthington writes, quote, this news resolves, in the grimmest way possible, questions that have long been asked about the whereabouts of Ibn al-Sheikh al-Libi, perhaps the most famous of America's disappeared. Those are prisoners seized in the so-called War on Terror who were rendered not to Guantanamo, but to secret prisons run by the CIA or to the custody of governments in third countries, often their own, where it was presumed they would never be seen or heard from again. Al-Libi was described as the emir or leader of a terrorist training camp in Afghanistan, and he was described as one of hundreds of prisoners seized by Pakistani forces in December 2001, crossing from Afghanistan into Pakistan. Most of these men ended up in Guantanamo after being handed over or sold to U.S. forces by their Pakistani allies. But al-Libi was notoriously rendered to Egypt by the CIA to be tortured on behalf of the U.S. government. Worthington adds, in Egypt he came up with the false allegation about connections between al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein that was used by President Bush in a speech in Cincinnati on October 7, 2002, just days before Congress voted on a resolution authorizing the president to use force against Iraq, in which, referring to the supposed threat posed by Saddam Hussein's regime, Bush said, quote, we've learned that Iraq has trained al-Qaeda members in bomb-making and poisons and deadly gases, end quote. Now, there's more here. The takeaway is that Ibn al-Sheikh al-Libi, whose false torture confession was used as a basis for Bush's war, has reportedly committed suicide in a Libyan prison cell.
Cut loose, unloose. with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Now, Brad Friedman put this up, late Saturday, early Sunday, the fact that Ibn al-Sheikh al-Libi, whose false torture confession was used as a basis for George W. Bush's lovely little war, al-Libi reportedly committed suicide inside a Libyan prison cell. And the point Friedman was trying to make, and he made it quite well yesterday, and possibly Saturday night, was that this was not reported anywhere. I haven't seen anything about it. Now, when I talk about mainstream media, I'm talking about the leaders in mainstream media, you know, New York Times, Washington Post, the networks, or the cable channels. The truth is, other than talk radio, that's where most people get their news, or what they think of as news. But anyway, al-Libi was captured by Pakistani bounty hunters or people who pretended they were bounty hunters, and he was either turned over or sold, along with scores of other prisoners, to U.S. forces in Afghanistan. He was then sent to Egypt, the infamous extraordinary rendition, in this case, to Egypt by the CIA to be tortured on behalf of the U.S. government. And in Egypt, he came up with the false allegations about the connections between al-Qaeda and Saddam, which led to Bush making that speech in Cincinnati on October 7, 2002. And 4 months later, on February 5, 2003, Secretary of State Colin Powell made the same claim in his notorious speech to the UN Security Council in an attempt to drum up support for the invasion. Powell said, quote, "I can trace the story of a senior terrorist operative telling how Iraq provided training in these chemical and biological weapons to al-Qaeda," end quote. Paul added, quote, "Fortunately, this operative is now detained, and he has told his story," end quote. Now, as a Newsweek report a couple of years ago explained, Paul did not identify al-Libi by name, but CIA officials. And a Senate Intelligence Committee report later confirmed that he, Paul, was referring to al-Libi. Now, al-Libi then recanted his story in February 2004 when he was returned to the CIA's custody. And he explained, as Newsweek described it, that he told his debriefers at the CIA that he, quote, he initially told his interrogators that he knew nothing about ties between Baghdad and Osama bin Laden, and he had difficulty even coming up with a story about a relationship between the two. The Newsweek report explained that his answers displeased his interrogators, who then apparently subjected him to a mock burial. As al-Libi recounted, he was stuffed into a box less than 20 inches high. When the box was opened 17 hours later, al-Libi said he was given one final opportunity to, quote, tell the truth, end quote. He was knocked to the floor and beaten for 15 minutes. It was only then that al-Libi said he made up the story about Iraqi weapons training for al-Qaeda. Now, the journalist Worthington concludes, quote, "The most important question he's asking just now, of course, is whether it was possible for al-Libi to commit suicide in a Libyan jail or whether he was murdered." Worthington says, "I doubt that we will ever find out the truth. Whatever al-Libi's actual crimes, his use as a tool in a program of extraordinary rendition and torture, exploited shamelessly not to foil future terrorist plots, but to yield false information about al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein, all of that remains a low point." There's the understatement of the year. "In a so-called war on terror that has few redeeming features." And then Brad updated his own story. He posted this Saturday evening, and then he has an update several hours later. Virtually zero coverage of this story in U.S. corporate mainstream media. Amazing. Amazing. So al-Libi, one of the persons that Bush used as the key person that Bush used as why we invaded Iraq, has, quote, committed suicide. Unbelievable. when Brad posted this this afternoon, now he put an update May 11th at 2:06 p.m. I assume that's I guess that would be West Coast time. Brad lives in L.A., right? As of this moment, not a single mainstream U.S. newspaper or broadcast outlet has reported on the story. A search of Alibi at Google News lists five stories in all. If you do, and by the way, the Brad blog coverage is the top story on the matter. But if you do a Google search on Wanda Sykes and Rush Limbaugh, you come up with more than 1,000 articles for Sykes Limbaugh or Sykes Hannity. More than 1,000 articles for each. So, so there you have it. Ibn al-Sheikh al-Libi, whose false torture confession was used as the basis for Bush's attack against Iraq, has reportedly committed suicide. Well, how convenient is that? What I should hear and see.
Loud, proud, progressive talk. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. By the way, if you are curious as to what has transpired for the people who set up the torture protocols on how to extract false confessions from captured Afghans or Pakistanis, you need look no further than Katha Pollitt's column in the May 18th issue of The Nation, entitled Better Living Through Torture. At one point in her column, she lists where they all are. John Yoo is now a tenured professor of law at Berkeley. He was the one who wrote the crucial memo saying that terrorist suspects weren't covered by U.S. commitments to treaties and agreements banning torture. Donald Rumsfeld, former Secretary of Defense, who encouraged interrogators to force prisoners to stand for long periods of time, got a one-year appointment to the Hoover Institute in Stanford. Jay Bybee, as you know, who was the Assistant Attorney General at the Office of Legal Counsel, he signed the memos narrowing the legal definition of torture to physical pain, quote, equivalent in intensity to the pain accompanying serious physical injury, such as organ failure, impairment of bodily function, or even death, and mental pain that results in, quote, significant psychological harm or significant duration, end quote. He, of course, is now a judge in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit. George Tenet got a $4 million, head of the CIA, got a $4 million advance for his memoirs. He also works at Allen & Company, described by UPI as, quote, a New York bank with a reputation for secrecy, end quote. Dick Cheney, you know what he's doing. He's having the time of his life, writing his memoirs by day and bashing Obama on Fox by night. Douglas Feith, remember him? His hand was in those torture memos, too. He now divides his time between the Hudson Institute and Harvard's Kennedy School of Government, where he's a Belfer Center visiting scholar. Bill Kristol, the man who was wrong about everything, lost his gig at the New York Times, but now he's at the Post, Washington Post, where the editorial page editor describes him as very smart and plugged in. He's also teaching a course on the, is it Persian general Xenophon? Is that Persian? I don't know. Somebody will explain that to me real quick. At Harvard. And Paul Wolfowitz, former defense secretary, who liked harsher methods of interrogation to extract more so-called intelligence from detainees before the war invasion of Iraq occurred. Today, Wolfowitz runs the U.S.-Taiwan Business Council and is a fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, along with John Yoo, Lynn Cheney, Charles Murray, Newt Gingrich, and similar scum. Katha Pollitt puts it, there you have it, book contracts, money, fellowships, columns, TV, comfy berths in fancy places, and lots of fun. In other words, torture works for the people who design it. Hey, I want to ask you to do me a favor. You've heard me mention Bob Kincaid at Head on Radio online many, many, many times. And there is a program run by democracyforamerica.com that provides what they call Netroots Nation scholarships. You vote for the candidate that you want to get one of these, and Bob Kincaid is among the finalists. What I'd like you to do, if you have a moment, go to democracyforamerica.com. On the left, on the main page, you'll see a column. Click the box that says Netroots Nation. And just follow through and vote for Bob Kincaid at Head on Radio. He has contributed an enormous amount to this program, not just in being a web trailblazer, but also in, as a matter of fact, he gave us a very key piece of equipment, didn't he, for this broadcast, a piece of equipment that would have cost us more than we had. So, for which we're deeply grateful. But also, when Bob emails me, sometimes with links to articles that I otherwise would miss, and I get them and pass them on, you, the listener, benefits from his work through this program, not just his program, but through this program too. So, just as a thanks to Malloy or Kincaid, if you would do that favor for me, go to democracyforamerica.com, democracyforamerica.com. On their main page on the left, you'll see a box. Click it. It says Netroots Nation, Netroots Nation. And if you would do that for me as just a personal favor to your buddy Malloy, I would appreciate it, because I'd like to see Kincaid win this. And so would a lot of people. And it takes, you know, you got to demonstrate support for the guy. So democracyforamerica.com, democracyforamerica.com. Click on the box that says Netroots Nation. And you may have to register something. I don't know. But just whatever you have to do, do it. And vote for Bob. Would you do that? Huh? Please? All right. The White House Correspondents' Dinner. Did you watch any of that? We had come home from, where did we go on Saturday? We had gone to a thing at Molly's school, a little festival at Molly's school. Then we went to Piedmont Park. That's right. She had a birthday party, a bowling birthday party. One of her little friends from school. And then I think we went to the park for a while. Piedmont Park is like Atlanta Central Park. Hung out. Didn't do any drum circles because it was sprinkling. And then came home and, messed around on the back porch, went on the back porch and listened to the night sounds and looked for fairies. And when we were putting her to bed, Kathy was reading her story, and I went over to watch television. And, oh, my God, there it was, the whole thing being telecast, the White House Correspondents' Dinner. And so I said to Kathy, quick, get her to sleep. And Molly went to sleep very quickly because she was exhausted. And then we watched this, and it was an absolute hoot. I'm very cynical about these kinds of dinners because I don't think reporters ought to hobnob on this level with their subjects. But I may be missing the point completely. I sometimes think, after being in this business as long as I have, that I take all this stuff way too seriously. And I think that's probably the case. But watching Obama speak last night and then watching Wanda Sykes, it was just an absolute hoot. I think everything Wanda Sykes said last night, she cracks me up. I first became familiar with her from Larry David's Curb Your Enthusiasm. I didn't realize that she was a comedian in her own right. I thought she was somebody that, you know, Larry David knew, who was very talented, lived in L.A., whatever. But Wanda Sykes is an amazing comedian and just funny as hell. The kind of humor that a lot of folks may get a little upset about. And that's just too damn bad, isn't it? When you have the airwaves being polluted 24/7, border to border, coast to coast, by the swine and scum that constitute talk radio, and then you, Wanda Sykes goes on for 6 minutes and does a comedy routine where she focuses in for, what, 2 or 3 minutes on the pig man and Sean Hannity, and now everybody's getting their bowels in an uproar about this? Oh, give me a break. Wanda, you go, girl. Just keep it up forever and ever. Keep it up, keep it up. Let's do Wanda first, okay? I'm going to play some Wanda Sykes. Here's a couple of cuts from the White House Correspondents' Dinner Saturday night. This is Wanda. And this first one, she's talking to Obama.
People love you. You know, and even the media. You know, you guys have been very favorable towards the president. You know, it's funny to me that they've never caught you smoking, but they somehow always catch you with your shirt off. I know you're into this transparency thing, but I don't need to see your nipples. Is there a beach at Camp David? What the hell? You know, there was never a nipple portrait of Lincoln's. I'm sorry.
I mean, you've got to give Wanda Sykes credit. She's addressing the President of the United States with this. And here's the next one.
But this is amazing. You know, the first black president. You know, I know you're biracial, but the first black president. I mean, it's proud. You're proud to be able to say that. You know, the first black president. You know, well, that's unless you screw up. And then it's going to be, what's up with the half-white guy, huh? Who voted for the mulatto? What the hell?
Oh, my God, I love this woman. Oh, and Joe Biden got a lot of ribbing last night from Obama, or Saturday night for Obama and Wanda.
Oh, and God forbid if Joe Biden falls in the hands of terrorists. God forbid if there's ever a hostage situation. We're done. Oh, they won't even have to torture him. All they have to do is go, how's it going, Joe? He's come back with stacks of information. What did he do? Did you waterboard him? No, I just said nice weather. He's still talking. Just can't listen to him anymore. It's like torture.
We'll be right back. I don't need your ghetto scenes. Colored lights can hypnotize. Sparkle someone else's eyes. Now, woman, get away from me.
Not ready to make nice. It's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour, Wanda Sykes is still on stage here from the White House Correspondents' Dinner on Saturday evening. She's an amazing comedian, just with the routine she normally does, but showing up and being one of the featured speakers at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and everybody knew what they were going to get into. All this with her on the podium, all this faux outrage from the right just cracks me up. Did the right have any problem when George Bush wandered around in a video looking for the weapons of mass destruction? Are they here? Are they over here? I mean, people die from that stuff. Wanda Sykes is not responsible for murdering anybody. George W. Bush is. Here she is again addressing the president.
Some people won't even allow you to help. Like, what's up with all these governors not wanting to take the money? Who turns down money? You know, maybe you should get Oprah to give it away. Oprah said, okay, governors, look under your seats. I know Governor Palin, she's not here tonight. She pulled out at the last minute. You know, somebody should tell her, that's not how you really practice abstinence.
Oh, my God. She continues to talk about the stimulus plan.
You know, these things, the states, they need the money. They need the money, especially our school system. I'm so happy that you're doing something about education and you want to pay our teachers more, because our teachers are grossly underpaid. That's right. Pay the teachers more money. Maybe then they'll stop sleeping with the students.
Oh, my goodness. John McCain. She talks about John McCain.
But, Mr. President, you've had your fair share of critics, you know. Even Senator McCain. Senator McCain gave you grief about the new helicopters that you didn't order. You know, I think Mr. McCain was just a little bitter because he wanted to be in the new helicopters. But I'm to tell Mr. McCain, like, Mr. McCain, I'm sure if you ask nicely, your wife will buy you a helicopter.
And then, of course, the pig man.
Rush Limbaugh, one of your big critics. Boy, Rush Limbaugh said he hopes this administration fails. Yeah. So you're saying, I hope America fails. He's like, I don't care about people losing their homes or jobs or our soldiers in Iraq. He just wants the country to fail. To me, that's treason. He's not saying anything differently than what Osama bin Laden is saying. You know, you might want to look into this, sir, because I think maybe Rush Limbaugh was the 20th hijacker, but he was just so strung out on Oxycontin, he missed his flight.
And the laughter and the groans from the audience on that one was wonderful. And of course, to the guy who is just so furious that the new rising star at Fox News is really Glenn Beck.
Sean Hannity. Sean Hannity said he was going to get waterboarded for charity, for armed first forces. He hasn't done it yet, I see. You know, talking about he can take a waterboard. Please. Yeah, okay, yeah, you might want to get waterboarded by someone you know or trust, but, you know, let somebody from Pakistan waterboard him. Keith Olbermann. Let Keith Olbermann waterboard him. He can't take a waterboarding. I can break Sean Hannity just by giving him a middle seat in coach. Oh, I need leg room.
Yeah, isn't that the truth with these wimpy little right-wing bastards? Finally, Dick Cheney.
Dick Cheney. Oh, my God. He's a scary man. It scares me to death. I tell my kids, I say, look, if two cars pull up, and one has a stranger, and the other car has Dick Cheney, you get in the car with the stranger. Dick Cheney is trying to defend torture. He's trying to defend torture. He goes, yeah, well, they should release the memos to show all that good information we got from our practices. You can't defend torture. That's like me robbing a bank. And then going in front of the judge and saying, yes, Your Honor, I robbed the bank, but look at all these bills I paid.
Oh, my God. I could listen to her for hours, just hours. I just love listening to Wanda Sykes. Kathy didn't have the other thing she said about Limbaugh was, you know, he wants the country to fail. I wish his kidneys would fail. Oh, God. Yeah, but see, as soon as people on the left start handing it back to these scum and thugs and bastards on the right, doesn't the caterwauling just rise like a brown cloud of toxic dust over the country? As soon as Monday morning rolls around and the daily assault over the airwaves begins once again from these turds on right-wing radio, which is 99% of all radio, and here it comes again every Monday. You know, we get Saturday and Sunday off. In some markets, they play rebroadcasts of these thugs. But you know it's a rebroadcast, and if you're a normal human being, you can escape it. Even if you're a right-winger, you probably don't listen on Saturday and Sunday to the rebroadcast of these Hannity and Savage and Beck and the rest of these bastards because, you know, even right-wingers at some point need to come up for air, I guess. But then come Monday morning, here we go, first thing in the morning, wham, it's back. You know, this toxic cloud of lies and deceit and poison and support for murder and torture and stomping on the Constitution, and it just goes on and on all week, day after day after day. Have you noticed that? That's why this program, The Molloy Show, is such a breath of night air. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program. If you're just joining us, boy, did you miss a funny first hour. Wasn't all that funny? Okay. Now, we had Wanda Sykes at the White House Correspondents' Dinner last night. Of course, the star of the program was Barack Obama, the president. And we have for you a few cuts, not as many as Wanda Sykes, because, frankly, Obama was not that funny. But a few for your listening pleasure. From last night's, Saturday night's White House Correspondents' Dinner, President Barack Obama.
I am Barack Obama. Most of you covered me. All of you voted for me. Apologies to the Fox table.
Yeah, did you see, I saw some video today of the guests arriving for the Correspondents' Dinner last night and the people at Fox as they came straggling in with these, I don't know, they had a look about them as though they wondered what they were doing out in the public like this with so many human beings around them. It was very interesting. Obama again.
Now, Sasha and Malia aren't here tonight because they're grounded. You can't just take Air Force One on a joyride to Manhattan. I don't care whose kids you are. We've been setting some ground rules here.
He also said they're starting to get a little carried away. Okay, that wasn't so funny. Here's his acknowledgement of Mother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers in the audience. I do have to say, though, that this is a tough holiday for Rahm Emanuel because he's not used to saying the word day after mother.
Ow! That gets an 8 on a score of 1 to 10. And then Obama brings up the pretend head of the Republican Party. The real head is Rush Limbaugh, but the pretend head.
Michael Steele is in the House tonight. Or as he would say, in the heezy. What's up? Where's Michael? Michael, for the last time, the Republican Party does not qualify for a bailout. Rush Limbaugh does not count as a troubled asset. I'm sorry.
And then, of course, he what's up? He brings up the idea of change.
All this change hasn't been easy. Change never is. So I've cut the tension by bringing a new friend to the White House. He's warm, he's cuddly, loyal, enthusiastic. You just have to keep him on a tight leash. Every once in a while he goes charging off in the wrong direction and gets himself into trouble. But enough about Joe Biden.
And this comment about John Boehner, the Republican House Minority Leader, I thought was nice and edgy.
In the next 100 days, our bipartisan outreach will be so successful that even John Boehner will consider becoming a Democrat. After all, we have a lot in common. He is a person of color. Although not a color that appears in the natural world.
What's up, John? And then the last one for tonight.
Finally, I believe that my next 100 days will be so successful, I will be able to complete them in 72 days. And on the 73rd day, I will rest.
All right. Say what you like. I know. He still hasn't deep-sixed some of the Bush policies that need to be deep-sixed very quickly. But just to pause for a moment and listen to his delivery is good. I doubt that he wrote the lines. His delivery is good, and I kind of repeated that, or I appreciated that. I did indeed. We have an Uncle Mike story corner coming up at the bottom of the hour. It has to do with the Israeli invasion and murder in Gaza, written by Gideon Levy at Haaretz newspaper in Israel. You might find this worth listening to. That's coming up in about 23 minutes. Meanwhile, in Afghanistan, a lot of stuff happening in Afghanistan. The Pentagon is replacing the top American commander in Afghanistan. His name is General David McKiernan. He's only, it's been less than a year, just 10 or 11 months since he took over. And this change marks what is being referred to as a major overhaul in military leadership in this war that has presented Obama with a worsening national security challenge. I wish somebody could explain to whoever's making the decisions that we are not going to win anything in Afghanistan. It's just going to be more slow death and disfigurement for American soldiers and death and destruction for Afghan civilians. But that's just my opinion. Defense Department officials said, according to Elizabeth Boomiller at New York Times, that the General McKiernan was removed because of what is described as a conventional approach to what has become one of the most complicated military challenges in American history. Now, he's going to be replaced by Lieutenant General Stanley McChrystal, who is a former commander of the Joint Special Operations Command, who recently ran all special ops in Iraq. Defense Secretary Gates, announcing this at a news conference this afternoon, said our mission there, Afghanistan, requires new thinking and new approaches by our military leaders. McChrystal is a West Point graduate who served in Afghanistan as chief of staff of the military operations there in 2001 and 2002. Remember, we didn't officially invade until 2002. He also commanded the 75th Ranger Regiment and served tours in Saudi Arabia during the Persian Gulf War in 1991. Of course, we weren't fighting in Saudi Arabia, but never mind. He's got one spot on his military record that raises some questions. That came in 2007 when a Pentagon investigation into the so-called friendly fire shooting death 3 years earlier of Corporal Pat Tillman in Afghanistan. That investigation found that General McChrystal was accountable for the lies provided by Corporal Tillman's unit in recommending him for a Silver Star. Now, Elizabeth Boomiller says the investigation held General McChrystal accountable for inaccurate information. No. Inaccurate information from someone who headed special ops in the United States Army for an awfully long time. There is no such thing as inaccurate information. There is only truth and lies. So McChrystal is willing to be a liar in order to perpetrate the myth of Pat Tillman's heroism. A little bit more about McChrystal. He's been in the special operations for 5 years. He commanded the Joint Special Operations Command. Early successes included the capture by his forces of Saddam Hussein in December 2003. He was promoted to three-star general on February 16, 2006. As head of what Newsweek magazine termed, quote, the most secretive force in the U.S. military, unquote, McChrystal maintained a very low profile until June 2006, when his forces were responsible for the death of Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, the so-called leader of al-Qaeda in Iraq, you know, the organization that, depending on whom you believe, doesn't really exist. Well, he only lied about Pat Tillman. We'll be right back. You broke the law, so accept your fate. They pull your car over and they beat you too. Oh, they want you to know they got their eye on you.
No more Mr. Nice Guy. Here's Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. Stanley McChrystal, Lieutenant General, will replace the outgoing commander at in Afghanistan, McKiernan, because the people planning and organizing this Afghanistan occupation feel that General David McKiernan is not quite up to snuff where it concerns counterinsurgencies. So they're going to use this guy, General McChrystal, who commanded the Joint Special Operations Command for 5 years and has quite a background in special operations. His early successes included the capture of Saddam Hussein and the death of Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, the so-called leader of al-Qaeda in Iraq. One of the negatives on his record is the fact that he lied knowingly and willfully about the circumstances around the death of Corporal Pat Tillman. Also at Wikipedia, you can find this. After McChrystal's team successfully located Zarqawi and called in the airstrike that killed him, McChrystal accompanied his men to the bombed-out hut to personally identify the body. impressed, President George W. Bush publicly credited McChrystal and his troops by name for Zarqawi's death, breaking an army policy against mentioning McChrystal in public. Asked to confirm that it was indeed McChrystal who had engineered Zarqawi's death, Multinational Force Iraq spokesman Major General William B. Caldwell said, quote, if the President of the United States said it was, then I'm sure it was, end quote. And then this you might want to file away because it will come up again. This will come up again, only when it comes up again, it's going to come up in a way that is going to make us poor Americans a little squeamish. Here it is. McChrystal's Zarqawi unit, which is named Task Force 6-26, became notorious for its interrogation methods, particularly at Camp Nama, where it was accused of abusing detainees. After the Abu Ghraib torture and prisoner abuse scandal became public in April 2004, 34 members of his task force were disciplined. 5 Army Rangers were ultimately convicted of prisoner abuse at Camp Nama. Now, you also might want to remember that at Bagram Air Base, which has its own torture and murder facility inside the encampment, there have been a number of prisoners who have been tortured to death by, if not U.S. forces, certainly under the command and control of U.S. forces. The number of those tortured to death is arguable. The New York Times, a couple of years ago, reported the stories of 2. Some estimates are as high as 200. So, the new commander of U.S. forces in Afghanistan is a general who apparently has no problem in lying about the so-called friendly fire death of someone under his command. That would be Corporal Pat Tillman. And who apparently has no problem in ordering his people to use enhanced interrogation techniques where it concerns detainees or prisoners in Afghanistan. I'm sure that the right-wingers in media will praise McChrystal's appointment. But you can write down the date of this program, May 11th, 2009, and the time, 10:26 Eastern Daylight Time. Mark it, because it's at this point that I am saying that at some point in the not-too-distant future, the techniques of General McChrystal are going to cause reactions around the world. And those reactions are going to guarantee yet more death and destruction, more plans of revenge, more possible actions against Americans here and abroad because of what we just can't seem to stop doing. And that is torture and murder and denying human rights to people that are swept up in these two wars of opportunity initiated by George W. Bush. And you'll notice that everyone in the Bush crime family fled the scene. None of them give a damn about what they started and what they've handed off to the next president. That in itself ought to be a war crime.
A traveler on an airline had his name on a secret list. He was taking away with his laptop, and as he left, he called out to me. I'm in the air one kind of mood. I heard the girls are sweeter there. I'm in the air one kind of mood. We'll have a water board to share. Where does the best help get around? Meet me, my friend, in Guantanamo.
Chop it out.
the voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Have you voted for Bob Kincaid yet? Did you do what I asked, gentle listener? You don't know what I'm talking about? Okay, go to, let me make it even easier. Go to Head On Radio Network. Head On, as in collision. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. And you'll see an ad there to send Bob Kincaid, who runs that network, to, call it summer camp. Anyway, would you do that? He just needs your vote. He's not looking for your money. I look for your money. For the subscriptions to the podcast. But go to Head On Radio Network, headonradionetwork.com, and cast a vote for Bob Kincaid. Would you do that as a personal favor to me? Headonradionetwork.com. All right. It is time once again for Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Oh, it's too hot to be wearing snuggly jammies tonight. It is late springtime. Can you say that? Late springtime. But we're all gathered together. It's time once again for Uncle Mike's Story Corner. And tonight's story is titled, Ask Your Sons. And it's written by Gideon Levy for the Israeli newspaper Haaretz. It is behavior well known to every police investigator. First, the subject denies everything, then attacks his interrogators, then admits to a small portion of the accusations, saying he merely did what everyone does, and finally breaks down and confesses. The Israel Defense Forces returned from Operation Cast Lead and, of course, denied everything. The people applauded it for its bogus victory, and no one paid much attention to the awful price paid by the Palestinians. But after the smoke, and in this case, white phosphorus, after the smoke cleared a bit, the blood began crying out from the ground. Foreign journalists and human rights groups investigated and reported their findings. The United Nations said the IDF intentionally targeted its facilities. Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International accused the army of illegally using phosphorus bombs. The International Red Cross reported on the injured being denied medical attention and strikes on medical crews. Officers at a preliminary course spoke of civilians killed, and Amira Haas wrote for Haaretz about the killing of people flying white flags, the use of flechette shells, and the annihilation of entire families. The ground began trembling beneath Israel's feet when it started attacking the emissaries of these organizations. The country's gates were closed to the UN fact-finding mission headed by Jewish South African Richard Goldstone, as if it were Zimbabwe or North Korea, as if it had much to hide. The president brusquely rebuked the UN's Ban Ki-moon and suggested he visits Auschwitz, until eventually the Secretary General was forced to shrink from supporting his organization's own damning report. Anyone who dared investigate and report was branded anti-Semitic. Little has changed since the early 1970s report by a group of American lawyers on the Shin Bet Security Service's alleged torture methods. These attorneys were immediately labeled anti-Semites. We deny, repress, lie, attack, and compare ourselves to others, and our conscience remains clear. Even when the IDF admits to killing 300 civilians, 90 of them children, 50 women, and 160 whose identities the army says is unclear, our story remains the same. We are the most moral army in the world, not the third most, not the second, the most. But let's assume Amnesty is lying, Human Rights Watch is fabricating, B'Tselem is embellishing, the UN is anti-Israel, and the media is full of hatred against us. Isn't there enough in the IDF's own figures to shake us to the core? 300 civilians killed, including 90 children. Isn't that enough to expose the propagandistic lie of the most moral army? How many innocent people must be killed for that to happen? The IDF conducted 5 so-called investigations, lamented one family's tragedy, and the military correspondents applauded again. The IDF spokesman's office sent battalion commanders to recite declarations on their own lofty battle ethics, with faces concealed, of course, as suspects often are, and the media didn't burden them with questions. No one believes this war should be subjected to a serious investigation, because in this war, unlike its predecessors, not enough soldiers were killed to justify that. But the truth cries out, even from the collapsed and perforated rubble of what was once a home. The soldiers who were in Gaza know, as do their friends, that something terrible happened there, just as those who served in the West Bank know. Ask your sons. They know the truth. The truth is sitting in your own home. And ask the friends of your sons and the sons of your friends. They know. Many of them are brainwashed and for now are keeping mum. Israel is holding back the tide of reports and investigations and putting its head in the sand of propaganda and victimization. But in the end, the truth will emerge. Even the excuse, everyone does it, will not do any good, as it does no good for a driver caught speeding. The Americans kill more, the French slaughtered more. That may do for the foreign ministry's automatic statements. We deserve more. We deserve the full truth. What exactly our soldiers did in our name, each of our names, on the streets of Gaza, imprisoned and bleeding for the 22 days of a useless war. Another Uncle Mike Story Corner. Tonight, written by Gideon Levy of Haaretz newspaper in Israel, and the title, Ask Your Sons. Not a very pleasant story from Uncle Mike tonight. Isn't it amazing, truth seekers, that something such as that, criticism / observation of the behavior of the most superior and advanced military in the Middle East, in its own popular press, by one of its most well-known, known worldwide writers, Gideon Levy, that can appear in Israel, on the newsstands, in people's homes. And in this country, our press is so censored, self-censored to a large extent, that pictures of our returning dead up until recently were not even allowed in newspapers or on television. Gideon Levy is right. Eventually the truth does cry out from the ground, and eventually those responsible for atrocities are brought to justice. Take a look at the aftermath of the Nazi war machine in World War II. But in this country, in the United States of America, right now, if you stick your head out the window and listen, you can hear the truth screaming to be heard about what we have done in Iraq and Afghanistan. And although Gideon Levy advocates against this, what we have done in Iraq and Afghanistan is 100 times, 1,000 times, 10,000 times more bloody and degenerate and murderous than what the IDF did in Gaza. So who in this country is calling out for the truth in so-called mainstream media? Who in the United States is saying, we must know what happened? You know, sadly, not even our president is calling for that. Uncle Mike does not like that sort of story corner. The Dark Lord, Dick Cheney, went on Face the Nation on Sunday this rat bastard just won't go away. As I said Friday, there's only one thing that will remove Dick Cheney from the public stage. There is something about this evil son of a bitch that draws media like flies around a pile of dead, rotting babies, if you know what I'm talking about. I don't know why any legitimate news outlet would provide this monstrous bastard with 30 seconds of airtime, much less a full interview with one of the deans of American journalism, Bob Schieffer. But we have three sound bites when we come back, so stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
Flying Monkey Free Fun and Frivolity with Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. Okay, come on now. Did you go to headonradionetwork.com yet and cast your vote for Bob Kincaid? Come on, come on. All right, Dark Lord Cheney. And again, there is only one thing that will get him off the stage. He's just going to stay out there, isn't he? He and the pig man, Rush Limbaugh. What a pair. Let's have Limbaugh for a president in 2012 with Cheney once again as the manipulator. Wouldn't that be great? Anyway, on Face the Nation, Bob Schieffer asked Deadeye Dick to explain his accusation that the Obama administration has made the United States more vulnerable to attack. Schieffer asked, quote, "You say that this administration has made this country more vulnerable to attacks here in the homeland."
What we've seen happen with respect to the Obama administration as they came to power is they have moved to take down a lot of those policies we put in place that kept the nation safe for nearly 8 years from a follow-on terrorist attack like 9/11. Dealing with prisoner interrogation, for example, or the terrorist surveillance program. And I think to the extent that those policies were responsible for saving lives, that the administration is now trying to cancel those policies or end them, terminate them, then I think it's fair to argue, and I do argue, that that means in the future we're not going to have the same safeguards we've had for the last 8 years.
God, these ghouls, these murderous bastards, these swine from the Bush crime family will never get it. These are not safeguards. In fact, just the opposite is true. You can't torture and terrorize people into being nice to you. You can't terrorize and torture people into falling over when you say boo because they're a Muslim fundamentalist and you're a Christian fundamentalist. You can't do that. All that accomplishes is recruiting more America-hating terrorists. But that's what they wanted. That's what the Bush crime family wanted, especially Cheney. False confessions from Al-Qaeda. To link it to Iraq so that George Bush could have his little war of opportunity, you know, and be a war president. And in that process, Bush became a stammering, staggering freaked out recruiting poster for Al-Qaeda, just as they planned. Schieffer then asked this evil undead bastard what he thought the torture accomplished. He said, "What do you say to those, Mr. Vice President, who say that when we employ these kinds of tactics, which are after all the tactics that the other side uses, that when we adopt their methods, that we're weakening security, not enhancing security, because it sort of makes a mockery of what we tell the rest of the world?"
Well, then you'd have to say that, in effect, we're prepared to sacrifice American lives rather than run an intelligent interrogation program that would provide us the information we need to protect America.
Oh, my God.
The fact of the matter is, these techniques that we're talking about are used on our own people. We've in a SEER program that, in effect, trains our people with respect to capture and evasion and so forth and escape. A lot of them go through these same exact procedures.
Do you now, is what you're saying here is that we should do anything if we could get information?
No. Remember what happened here, Bob. We had captured these people. We had pursued interrogation in a more normal way. We decided that we needed some enhanced techniques. So we went to the Justice Department. And the controversy has arisen over the opinions written by the Justice Department. The reason we went to the Justice Department wasn't because we felt we were going to take some kind of free-hand assault on these people or that we were in the torture business. We weren't. And if we had been about torture, we wouldn't have wasted our time going to the Justice Department.
Oh, of course you would, you nasty son of a bitch. You own the Justice Department lock, stock, and barrel. Come on, Cheney. Bob Schieffer may show you some kind of undeserved respect and sit there and listen to you vomit this crap all over his television network. But do you honestly believe that other than Fox television viewers, anybody believes the thing you're saying? You murderous son of a bitch. You went to the Justice Department so you would have some kind of thin, plausible deniability and the ability to point the finger at Gonzalez or his underlings or Bibi and say, blame them. They authorized it. We just asked for the right to torture, but they gave it to us. They're bad, not us. Dick Cheney, you were a coward back in the 60s when it was your turn to join the military. You sneaky little bastard. You're a coward now. You always will be a coward. This country is made less by the fact that you held any office, much less the office of vice president. You're scum, Cheney. Absolute, irredeemable scum.
The logic that he uses there is the thing that really bothers me. It's like, oh, well, you know, even if it was torture, what the problem here is not that it's torture, it's that it's the Justice Department authorized. See, we went to the Justice Department, so that makes it okay. They said it was okay. That's like our four-year-old Molly. If, you know, Mommy, can I have a cookie? And I said, yes, and she ate 40 cookies and got sick, and she said, but Mommy said I could eat a cookie.
Yeah.
It's Mommy's fault.
Right. No, Dick Cheney.
It's the Justice Department's fault because they gave them the permission.
Dick
Cheney. That's insane.
Dick Cheney is, always has been Dick Cheney, always will be Dick Cheney. He operates the way every coward operates. Only this one had the power to send literally hundreds of thousands of people to their deaths. It is 7 past the hour. I just went to the website, headonradionetwork.com, and clicked on the link there to see how the voting is coming. Come on. Come on, folks. Do this for me, because this one doesn't cost you anything. Every time I make a pitch, you know, for 25 cents a program for the Molloy podcast, yeah, I'm making a pitch for your money. I want your quarters. Oh, dear God, do I want your quarters? I really do, to keep the program on the air and make sure the bills get paid. Yes, I want your quarters. I want your quarters. But that's why this is a two-bit program. It only costs a quarter for the podcast and all the stuff that goes with it. But Bob Kincaid, headonradionetwork.com, which is one of the trailblazer sites for Internet liberal talk, or any talk for that matter, please go there. Headonradionetwork.com. There's only, not very much time left for this voting. But go to headonradionetwork.com and look there. You'll see what to click on. Just click on it and vote for him, for Bob Kincaid, okay? So many people who do not hear Bob on the air because he's not on the air do not realize how key his program is. You know, Hartman would say it is. I'm sure the Young Turks would say it is. Who else would say it is? I know I damn sure say it is. I say it is because I use stuff I get from his site. But go there. Okay? Will you do that for me? Head on, as in collision. Headonradionetwork.com. And just click on the stuff there and make that happen, all right? We have one more from this murderous bastard Dick Cheney on Face the Nation yesterday. I watched just a tiny bit of that when I was walking in and out of the room where Kathy was sitting there recording it into her computer and taking notes, and I just, you know, drinking her third cup of Super Beans coffee for the morning, and, you know, I'm just thinking, Jesus, Kathy, come on, it's Sunday, stop. It's Mother's Day, come on. We get away from that, you know. But now, you know, not only does she have to engineer this tiny little station that we have here, but she also has to produce. So she got this stuff down. And I want you to hear this. Schieffer asked Cheney about the Ireland Spectre defection, which it really isn't. He also asked about Colin Powell's recent remarks and the criticism that the Republicans have moved too far to the right. Schieffer, with a very straight face, very serious look on his face, says, Colin Powell, Rush Limbaugh, said the other day that the party would probably be better off if Colin Powell left and just became a Democrat. Colin Powell said Republicans would be better off if they didn't have Rush Limbaugh speaking for them. Where do you come down on this?
Well, if I had to choose in terms of being a Republican, I'd go with Rush Limbaugh, I think. My take on it was Colin had already left the party. I didn't know he was still a Republican.
You know, so you think that he's not a Republican?
I just noted he endorsed the Democratic candidate for president this time, Barack Obama. I assume that that's some indication of his loyalty and his interest.
And you said you'd take Rush Limbaugh over Colin Powell.
I would.
Oh, my God. Sick, miserable eater of the dead. There's only one way Cheney will ever leave the political stage. But in the meantime, why do the producers of Face the Nation or Press the Meat or this abominable program that John, what's his name, on CNN hosts on Sunday, or what the hell's his name? Don't email it to me, because I really don't care. Why don't these people stop inviting this ghoulish, lying, torture-enabling, miserable son of a bitch? Why do they keep inviting him on? What is the point? The destruction he and his crew did to this country over 8 miserable years is going to take generations to heal, if it ever does. Why? Why would somebody like Bob Schieffer invite this filthy, stinking pig onto his program? Purely rhetorical questions, that's all. I just have to sit here for 10 seconds. I'm sorry. Every time I hear his voice or see his face, it's just, I can't believe that I live in a country where that monstrous bastard was vice president for 8 years, and who actually ran the country for 8 years, ran the CIA, ran the DIA, ran the Pentagon, ran the energy policy, set everything. George W. Bush was nothing more than the little punk, embarrassed gopher boy who sat there while Dick Cheney told him exactly what to do and when to do it. Oh. Regarding the this ginned up outrage over Wanda Sykes' comments at the White House Correspondents' Dinner Saturday night, got an email here from George. Who writes, hey, we all had a laugh when some sick Republican named Inhofe was outraged by the outrage over detainee torture. Well, now it's my turn. I was literally horrified as soon as I heard the low scoffing and rumbling at the Correspondents' Dinner in response to Wanda Sykes' joke on Rush Limbaugh. I think this is actually one of the most telling and important views into the mental lives of the American press and the D.C. insiders, elite, and other disturbed and dangerous individuals. Here is a list of things that did not go too far. Lying our country into war, sacrificing thousands of lives and hundreds of billions of dollars of treasure, scrapping the Constitution, torture, disenfranchising hundreds of thousands of U.S. voters, drowning 2,000 Americans in New Orleans, yada, yada, yada. You know the litany. Here's what did go too far. Wishing harm to one big fat idiot in the context of that idiot's support for the destruction of the U.S. presidency and the downfall of the beloved United States. Oh, and by the way, also in the context of a comedy routine, we finally found something these bastards find offensive. Not stacks of naked, feces-covered prisoners, not war or torture, not the liquidation of the U.S. Treasury by corporate criminals, none of that. Their only real concerns are for the welfare of one big, fat, racist billionaire. George. Yeah, I don't know what that rumbling and groaning was after Sykes said that. And I understand, even though he was off camera, that Obama sat there very stone-faced. People in the know said he was chewing on the insides of his cheeks so he wouldn't bust out laughing. So, yeah, it was funny as hell.
Hey, I just don't understand it. I mean, maybe it's because it was the White House Correspondents' Dinner, but I have seen comedians get up there, and Dennis Miller, and I don't know. I mean, I could think of things, and
sure,
just busting up on different media personalities left and right, and politicians, and there's no outrage.
Yeah, well, I know. I know. I know. I would just as soon, though, continue to see Republicans bow and scrape and defer to the pig man. I really would. I hope that continues. I hope it does. I hope Limbaugh continues to eat all this adulation and deference that is pushed in his face by these phony-ass fake Republicans. The head of the Republican National Committee and the former vice president, not to mention innumerable, if not all, Republican members of the House and the Senate, they bow and scrape to this bloated Jabba the Hutt, and I want it to continue. What are we down to now? 18% of Americans identify themselves as supporting Republican ideas or supporting this particular rotting incarnation of the Republican Party. Keep going, pig man. Keep going. Keep going. Just keep going, dude. Smoking, porn watching, lazy ass hippies like me. Tree-hugging, love-making, pro-choice and gay-wedding, widespread-digging hippies like me. Skin color-blinded, conspiracy-minded, protesters of corporate greed. We who have nothing, and most likely will till we all end up locked up in jail.
by conservative Christian, right-wing Republican, straight white American man. Diamonds and dogs, boys and girls.
Renegade Talk Radio done right, from the left. It's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. What else have we got here? A lot of stuff. Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness, I almost forgot. We have a report from our economics correspondent, Prairie 2, the infamous Prairie 2. You can go to, I say infamous because he tells us things that we don't really like like to hear. You can go to his website anytime you like and read some of these commentaries if you happen to have missed some. Prairie2.com, prairie2.com. He writes, excuse me, tonight, Mike, the stock market was down significantly today, and the corporate news readers promptly blamed this on the announcement from the Department of Justice that they will do away with the Bush crime family policy of not enforcing the antitrust laws under any circumstances. A DOJ spokesman linked our current economic crisis in part to this practice, although really, not enforcing the antitrust laws is a practice dating back to day one of the Reagan administration and ever since, including Clinton. We needed to have bigger companies to compete with foreign corporations so the jobs would stay in America. Yeah, that from Clinton. The corporate news readers went on to speculate. There was no pretense of it being anything but speculation, but it was included in the news anyway. That likely targets of the Department of Justice were companies like Google and Intel. No mention of the too big to fail banks that have in fact put all of us straight in the crapper. Will Obama's administration go after these bloated parasites under the antitrust laws? Is this why the stress tests of the banks were allowed to come to an ineffectual end? The stress tests given to the banks has inspired no confidence among impartial observers who point out that the test didn't bother to consider the differing nature of each bank's loan portfolio or business model. It appears that it was designed to come up with a capital requirement number less than the remaining TARP funds rather than any true assessment of the bank's conditions. The test even allowed for banks to have a 25-to-1 debt-to-net capital ratio. This is much like the ratio allowed the investment banks, that no longer exist, where any relatively minor crisis will make them run out of cash. Remember that the investment banks, that, did I mention, no longer exist, didn't cash your checks or make your credit cards work at the store. These guys running out of cash is a far more serious matter. But really, the banks are only maintaining the fiction of solvency by not marking to market. If forced to acknowledge the real value of the so-called toxic assets now in their books, all of the big banks would have to close their doors. The government's test accepted the bank's version of what their assets are worth without question. Then there is the commercial real estate market. The test didn't allow for significant bank losses in that area, even though experts are predicting that we've only seen the tip of the iceberg. So, the question remains, what will Obama do about the large banks? If they were treated like the savings and loans of the 80s, a lot of very wealthy Americans would suddenly become middle class when their bonds are declared worthless. People who bought SNL bonds that became worthless were mostly middle class retirees that became destitute. Ever wonder why the very rich invest in low-yielding bank bonds rather than the stock market like they tell us to do with our Social Security? They expect the government to bail them out. Now that's real Social Security. Prairie2.com. Check him out. Ah. Okay, let's open up the phone lines. The number here is 877-996-2556. 877-99-MALLOY if you want to fumble around with your phone and try to convert letters to numbers. 877-996-2556. I'm open to just about anything you want to bring up that we've talked about tonight. That's always the key to getting on the program. Keep it on the topic that we have talked about this evening, and you will make it through. She who must be obeyed, Kathy, who answers the phone. Oh, okay, nobody's going to call? All right, well, screw it. Let's play some music. You want to play some music? Yeah, let's just... Oh, there we go. The number again is 877-996-2556. I don't know. I guess when I call out the number, I expect all the lines to light up immediately. And it, you know, it takes a minute or two. I guess you have to look around the house or the apartment and find your phone, right? Okay. We have a break coming up here. When we come back, we will go to your phone calls. And hear what you've got to say. All right? Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Oh, here it is. Back to Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. All right, this is getting embarrassing. It really is. We haven't gotten enough votes yet for Bob Kincaid at headonradionetwork.com. That's where you go to pick up the link to vote for him for this this event that his network has got to cover. And I'm kind of embarrassed here because I thought, well, gee, just mention it and a lot of people will go and it'll be over. There's only about 25 minutes left and the voting closes. It ends at midnight here on the East Coast. So if you're listening to this on delay, don't bother. It'll be, obviously it'll be too late. And that, of course, is not your fault or responsibility. But for folks who are listening live, whether you are listening on the air or on the internet, please do this for me. Really, I'm really asking. I'm pleading with you. Go to Head On Radio Network, headonradionetwork.com, and you'll see what to do there. And vote for Bob Kincaid. Please do this. All right. I'll tell you what. If you do this, I will not say another word tonight about becoming a podcast subscriber of the Malloy Program. How's that?
I'm hearing that people have crashed the site. No one else can get on because it just won't allow anybody else on.
All right. Well, then the other site.
Democracy Interactive?
No. The site I first gave out this evening for, somebody will send it to me. But we crashed the site. Crashed Head On Radio? No, I don't think. That's impossible. They broadcast on that site. Well, keep trying. You have some time left. All right, where were we? There was something I wanted to say when we came back, and it's gone. Another senior moment wins. Bonnie is calling from Madison, Wisconsin, listening on the mic. Hey, Bonnie.
Hey, Mike. I don't know if you can hear. I can't hear you very well.
You can't?
No. Can you talk loud?
We've got you pretty much.
That's about it, huh?
Is that okay. Better? Is that any better?
It's a little bit better, yeah.
A little bit. Okay.
Mike, I want to first tell you that what the job you're doing and the service you're doing to our country is immeasurable. I'm an ex-reporter, newspaper reporter, and I've watched the press decline. So from what it was when I was young and...
Jamie, I
really, really am concerned that he's trying to set himself up an empire, and I hope that doesn't sound paranoid.
Okay, just remember, Bonnie, that what you hear on this program is not, I'm not a journalist or a reporter by any means. What we do is kind of take so much from real journalists, from real sites that do real reporting, and filter it down into the program. But I appreciate what you had to say.
Oh, yes. Wait a minute. I have something more important to say.
Okay. All right. Yeah, go ahead.
There?
Yeah, I'm here.
I don't have a computer, but I'd like to send money to you monthly. And is there any kind of address or something?
Well, actually, if you don't have a computer, actually, no. We're set up for this for internet. The whole idea of the podcasting is downloading through a computer to some other mechanical device.
Uh-huh. I might get a computer soon, and when I do, I'll.
All right. Yeah. Just let me. Let me know when you do get a computer, and we'll definitely get you set up, Bonnie. Jonathan is calling from Burlington, Vermont, listening online. Hey, Jonathan.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm good. Can you hear me okay?
I can.
Okay.
Yeah, I was. I loved your stuff about the BS outrage over Wanda Sykes and anything and everything. And I was talking to Kathy, but she remembered. I'm sure you will. You remember the phony outrage about the Paul Wellstone Memorial?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And how the, I love the suck-up media, how they completely, they made that a reality. It was such an outrage for, I think the only media figure who registered an objection to that was Eleanor Clift, I remember,
uh-huh.
On some panel program said, look, it was... their memorial for their father, sister, and mother,
right.
They could have a balloon drop and a 30-piece brass band if they wanted.
That's right.
Right. She was the only one. But I remember, to this day, I will never forget Trent Lott's face feigning this outrage.
Yeah.
This is just an old tactic of theirs to create these phony etiquettes, these false etiquettes that don't exist. This was the way these two kids, who were the only survivors of that, which with my conspiracy-oriented mind, I think it was a murder, the Wellstone situation, but an assassination. But their way of dealing with the grief was to sort of rally and scream, "We will win, we will win," I thought was beautiful.
Yeah, it was. And what really gets me, Jonathan, and thanks, Jonathan, I appreciate you checking in. What really gets me is the way... these filthy, disgusting Republicans, the few remaining ones in the real world, out here in the real world, are a bunch of meatheads. The ones that are left that can just totally dominate media, whether it's radio or television, and even a lot of the print media, these people eventually will rot away, and this country is going to cast them aside. But the way they define the terms and the way... mainstream media that is not totally popular with these right-wing bastards, mainstream media allows them to define the terms. You have a public editor at the New York Times who sits there and debates for weeks whether or not the Times should use the term torture where it concerns what is being done to detainees at our various and sundry torture facilities. I mean, it's disgusting. I hate Republicans to a depth and degree that shocks me sometimes. By the way, if headonradionetwork.com is not functioning right because of traffic, go to democracyforamerica.com, democracyforamerica.com, and you can get to the... to the voting site there. Okay? All right, where are we? Bill is calling from Phoenix, listening online. Hey, Bill, by the way, we're going to be back on the radio in Phoenix pretty soon.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah, we got our XM radio about 3 or 4 years, my wife and I, because we couldn't get you here in Phoenix at one time.
Yeah.
That's why we got the XM.
I think, as a matter of fact, I think we're going to be back on KPHX. But anyway,
fantastic.
Yeah.
Listen, Mike, I called in because I remember last week you were talking about, the plane incident in New York City. And you were talking, that flew around supposedly in a photo op, which it really wasn't. But you mentioned another incident, and you're wondering what's going on with Obama's administration. Well, if you remember, Bush and Cheney, they appointed 40 people each, from political appointees to civil service employees.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard something on the radio this morning which confirmed my theory. I was listening to the Black Eagle out of Washington, D.C., Joe Madison.
Uh-huh.
And he was really fuming about, get this, the Obama administration and their budget cut $73 million from the United Negro College Fund.
Really?
He was really fuming about that. I don't blame him, of course, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm saying these appointees from the Bush administration are now coming out the woodwork, I believe. And the things that are occurring, I believe that that this is part of their campaign to bring down Obama's administration, the Republican Party.
Well, there are so many roaches and termites in this country, Bill, and it doesn't make any difference, really, when you get down to it, what color or what gender or what political stripe they are. There's so many people in the society who are deeply invested in seeing the Obama administration fail. People on the far right, people on the far left, everybody in these groups that are frustrated with, and rightly so, our system, are wanting the whole thing to collapse. The people on the right, so that fascism can finally be put in place here after an 80-year struggle, actually more than that. And people on the far left are hoping that a complete form of socialism can be put in place after a struggle in this country for socialism that goes back over a century. So he has people in various quarters, political, racial, in matters of gender, that are hoping for his failure. And this is why the guy continues to impress me, is that he knows this. I mean, he understands. He understands what is at stake here with his administration. And yet he continues to more or less tell everybody to either get in the game or get the hell out of his way. And, I don't agree with Barack Obama on an awful lot of his policies. I damn sure respect him on that one. Ben Birch is our technical advisor. Sharon Gordy, our military affairs correspondent. Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf are the program's ethical advisors. Bruce Enberg, our economic correspondent. Did I mention the executive producer is Kathy Bay? It is late, isn't it? Tom is calling from Arizona, listening on XM. Hey, Tom.
No, actually, I'm listening on the Internet. I'm a $7.95 a month prescriber.
Oh, sorry.
Anyway, I have a couple political jokes for you because you were talking about political jokes earlier.
Yeah.
Okay, what do you call Bill O'Reilly with a bullet in his left knee and a bullet in his right knee?
Is this clean enough to say on over the air radio?
Yes, it is. Fair and balanced.
Fair and.
Okay. What do you call Rush Limbaugh with a bullet in his left knee and a bullet in his right knee?
Is this clean enough to say on over the air radio?
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
Mega dittos.
And what's the third one? There's always three, Tom. What's the third one?
Well, the third one would be, it's not really that funny, but I'd like to take the Republican opposition conservatives.
Yeah.
And bury them in my hometown here in Bullhead City on the desert.
Yeah.
Up to their necks in sand.
Yeah.
And then whack, and then feed them full of corn and water. And let them talk to each other for about a month, and then whack off their heads, and then grind them up into sausage and make the homeless happy with their food.
How long have you been off your medication and out of the institution?
I'm still trying to get one here. They don't have one.
One what?
This is such a small town. Oh, they don't have a mental institution.
They don't. Well, then, here's what I suggest, Tom. You need to go to your basement. Oh, that's right. You live in the desert. All right. Go to your attic. Tie yourself to something strong and until you calm down a little bit. Cut their heads off and make sausage?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm the same guy. Remember the time you were talking about Viagra and ecstasy and all that stuff?
No, but...
You were talking about Viagra and stuff like that as stimulants, and I wrote you an email.
Yeah?
And you sent me back an email. I told you about I'm afraid to go into the bar, the local bar, because all the 21-year-old women, I'm a 55-year-old man,
yeah.
I'm afraid all the 21-year-old women are going to stash my beer with ecstasy and Viagra and take advantage of me.
Does that happen a lot?
Yeah, they try to take advantage of me. I have to beat them off with a stick every time I go outside.
Uh-huh. All both of them out there in Bullhead City, Arizona, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got you.
It's terrible.
All right. Well, listen, Tom, always good to hear from you. And I mean that. It's always I'm always glad to hear from you. And I hope everything works out. Bullhead City, Arizona. Now, if it were early in the evening here, Tom, I would ask you where the name of your town comes from. When I was a kid, we used to call certain catfish were called bullheads. Oh, never mind. All right. What do we have? Anything left that we haven't covered tonight, Kathy? That you feel is important. Let's see. We did the Wanda Sykes and President Obama at the Correspondents' Dinner. Dick Cheney on poor old Bob Schieffer's program. I hate to see Bob Schieffer reduced to being the straight man for a terrorist murderer like Cheney. I really do. The comments that Wanda Sykes made about Rush Limbaugh are not only are they perfectly attuned to what he is, Limbaugh is. I think most people in this country understand that Rush Limbaugh is a terrorist by George Bush's definitions. Not to lean on George Bush to validate anything that normal people might agree upon, but Limbaugh does qualify, just like the Republican Party qualifies as a terrorist organization. But Limbaugh, of all people, and it's coming. I tell you, I can smell it. Almost like, have you ever smelled a corpse? It's a smell that you never, ever, 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 ever forget. And Limbaugh has this stench about him. I don't know what that means. I don't know exactly what I'm what I'm getting at here, but there is something heading Limbaugh's way like a meteorite, and I don't know. If anybody out there in Radioland really cares for this guy, you might want to warn him. It might be time for him to, maybe he doesn't have a basement in his 22,000 room mansion either, because he lives on the ocean, right? But for those right wingers who monitor this program, the greasy little freaks over at Free Republic and places like that, you might want to send your boy an email and tell him that the vibration between the spheres is such that there's something, I don't know, I wish I could put my finger on it. I wish I were more psychic than I am. It fades. You know, the older you get, unless you really concentrate on your psychic abilities that everyone has, I mean, it's nothing unusual, it starts to fade. But this is coming in loudly and clearly. Something evil Limbaugh's way comes. It's there. It's in the vibratory field. It's there. I don't know. Somebody pass that on to him, quick. All right, you have 2 minutes to go to vote for our boy. You can go back to headonradionetwork.com now. You've got 2 minutes. 2 minutes to do it. Headonradionetwork.com. Vote for Bob Kincaid. All right? I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.